Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I am joined again on the podcast by Sam Isaacson. And Sam is a leading thinker at the intersection of coaching and technology. Today, we're going to explore a few different things. We're going to look back at some of the predictions that Sam made last time he was on the podcast to see how they played out. Did they come true in the timelines he thought they would do? We're going to look at what is Sam's current perception and thinking around AI and how it will impact our industry. He'll make some more predictions about what's coming down the pipeline, and we'll kind of muse generally around this whole topic of AI, the emergence of AI, and the impact it's going to have in our field. So Sam is the creator of a coach platform called AICoach.chat. He created the Coach Tech Collective. He has a popular LinkedIn newsletter and several books to his name, including the AI and Digital Coaches Handbook. Let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Sam Isaacson. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. Sam, so I'm really happy to be with you. Yeah, how are you doing, first of all?
Well, I'm happy to be with you too. And I've been looking forward to this all day, and my day so far has been a bit bouncing from one thing to the other. And this is a high point in it. So I'm very much looking forward to this conversation. Lovely to be back.
I hope we can deliver, or I can deliver on this being the high point of your day. Let's make it that. And what's interesting is as we were checking in, we were, just remembering that it was about 3 years ago that you first came on the podcast and we talked about AI and coaching. And so it's kind of interesting to come have you back and tune back into the state of play, so to speak. There was a number of things that we were kind of discussing in that last conversation. And of course, it does feel like the rubber meets the road, really, in the last 3 years in terms of, AI has become a thing now, hasn't it? I mean, it was back then, but now it's like more of a thing, isn't it? So What's your sense of where we are at? We're going to go more deeply into how AI is impacting coaching, but what's your sense of, in general, where we're at with AI? What, where are you like, oh yeah, these, it's kind of, it's exceeded my expectations, and where are you like, oh, it didn't quite deliver on this yet?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? There's this idea when we start playing with a new piece of technology, it appears to be magic. And then after we've played with it for a while, it becomes boring and annoying. So you remember probably the launch of the first iPhone where you were able to just touch the buttons with your finger. I think it was the iPod Touch first, where you could just touch it with your finger, didn't need a stylus. And then you just swiped and the screen changed. And it felt like what we are living in the future. But when you look back at that first generation, it didn't have a camera. It didn't have anything. It's absolutely useless. It barely did anything. It could make phone calls, but it just happens to be that the screen was a touch screen. And I think that's how it would feel like to sort of go back in time, even just a couple of years, and play with the AI that we had access to then. So ChatGPT would have been 3.5 at that point that we were recording that, and it's at version 5 now, which is significantly better. It doesn't feel like it's landed though, and I think that's probably where it's easy for our heads to go, and probably mine was in that first conversation, was we're in like state A, and AI is here and is going to take us into state B. So when we get to state B, what's that going to be like, and how quickly is it going to be before we get to state B? And I think that it's a lot more fluid than that. And so in the last few years, things have moved on. There are some things that have happened and some things that are not getting as, they're not getting better as quickly as I'd like them to. But there's some sort of movement. And so we're in a journey of evolution and change. And I think that's basically what the message is. We're not going to land anywhere. And so we need to sort of act to be flexible with what's changing around us. Is not particularly answering your question, is it? I think there are some bits about AI that are working very well. Actually, it is doing things in the way that it's meant to do. You can have an app in your phone where you have a quick chat with something that feels authoritative and listens to you and provides some opinions. And that's very helpful. If you've just got some stuff in the fridge and you want it to make a quick recipe based on those ingredients, it will do it. And it actually is fine. It's much quicker than having to search through SEO optimized articles on the internet. And then there's other things that it is extremely disappointing at. And there are stories of organizations that have made their entire customer service team redundant, replaced it with a chatbot, and then rehired the team back because it just isn't doing what it's actually meant to do. And if you've ever, well, you will have used AI to try to generate an article to share on social media or something, and it just all feels the same. There's nothing exciting about it. It's not as impressive as it first felt. So it's changing some things, and it's now present in our lives, and also it's not as exciting as it maybe first appeared in some corners of it. It doesn't mean it's not influential and disruptive, and it absolutely is those things. So interesting to be observing it.
Where are you most excited where in your use of AI? We're going to talk about AI and coaching in a moment, but maybe that is in coaching, but where are you most excited about your use of AI? And is there, an area where you felt it's just not delivered so far?
Well, I mean, it is extremely interesting in the world of coaching, and that's where a lot of my thinking sort of happens in that space. But in my real life, I use it a lot in, I describe it as creating virtual colleagues. I basically create automated workflows that incorporate generative AI into them so that I can do things through these through virtual characters that I have created that compensate for my personal weaknesses. I work for myself and I'm not organized enough to keep a little spreadsheet of things that I'm meant to do, but machines are. And so long as I sort of spin up a little virtual colleague and make it do that stuff so that I can just say, oh, I need to reply to Joel about that podcast, that it will then actually get done instead of just sitting in my brain somewhere in a dusty corner until I happen to open up my podcast app and see your face and think, oh, probably should drop him an email. That's that's a really helpful thing that it's doing. Yes, and I think that there's a lot of AI that I am seeing in generation of content on social media that just feels a bit disappointing. The volume of AI-generated images that are being used in advertising or just to generate content feels like it's never quite delivering. And I can't remember if I mentioned this when we spoke a while ago. There's a guy that is a public speaking coach and has got an entire library of photos of himself doing really good public speeches. And he's got an AI-generated photo of himself as his lead Facebook ad. And I just think, what are you doing? It's a really bad use of AI. You know, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. So, yeah, it's not. We haven't landed anywhere yet, and it doesn't feel like we are heading anywhere to land. There's just a lot of experimenting going on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's certainly that deluge, or the beginning of the deluge of AI generated content, which, you know, ranges in quality. And, you know, we kind of mused last time, I think, whether, you know, what would it do to human culture, you know, if more and more of the art that we, you know, we're engaging with is created by AI, or just the content online, would it break the internet even? I've heard people say that, you know, it's just gonna, if we just explore it in terms of coaching now. One thing. So, you know, you said, like, I've got these AI colleagues, you know, I think you kind of, and do you find, is the danger in that suddenly we're going to have to be managing all our AI kind of colleagues, you know, instead of, so that, you know, we've created new problems for ourselves in that, you know, we're now kind of, our time's all consumed with making sure they're doing what they're meant to be doing, tweaking them, etc.
That's absolutely true. And technology definitely introduces problems at least as much as it introduces benefits. It's the problem with it, I think, is that when you discover, so for example, I've created this little workflow where I send myself, it's not myself, I send this bot a text message to say, oh, you know, I think I'm going to be able to sell a workshop to this person. And it understands all of the context of that and knows what's important to me. And so fills in a spreadsheet with some estimates of how much it would be worth and what the timeline is going to be looking like and what a good next step would be. It's really, really helpful. And it's going to send me a nudge in a couple of weeks to say, did you follow up with whoever it was that I was speaking to? So it's really helpful. However, the amount of effort that it takes to set one of those things up isn't zero. It's not a huge amount, but it isn't zero. And the technology is moving forward quite rapidly. So there's going to be a point in time, for example, this will be a significant leap, but probably within our lifetimes, almost certainly within our lifetimes, where it would be reasonable to expect that if you wanted, then you could buy a humanoid robot to work in your home and you ask it to make you a cup of tea and it goes and makes you a cup of tea or tidies up or changes the baby's nappy or something like these. And some of those things are completely harmless and some of them you think that's bigger questions that need answering about that. But it's a significant shift from me sitting at my laptop tapping away to try to figure out what process the data needs to go through to make something work for me. And so there's always a sense that we end up investing our time looking in the wrong area and suddenly something catches us off guard. So there are other technologies around the outside. Nobody talked about AI particularly until ChatGPT came along, and then suddenly everybody did. But there was this little pocket of nerds that was talking about this thing called GPT-3 that was really quite good. And I wrote about it because I'm a nerd. So I'd seen that there's this thing. And then ChatGPT came along and suddenly everybody knew about this. And there are pockets around the world that are working on smart glasses. That's going to be reasonably bleak, reasonably soon. Blockchain, I mean, we're seeing cryptocurrencies already being quite disruptive. Quantum computing, there's some quite big stuff happening now and coming right down the pipe. Brain-computer interfaces, computers that are created through organic matter rather than, you know, silicon and that sort of thing. There's quite a lot of technologies that are not connected directly together yet, but if you imagine a humanoid robot run on quantum computing that can communicate through a decentralized network instead of center. I mean, there's a lot when these things connect that will really, really change the way that we imagine that technology could interact with us. And some of them in a really disruptive way. So I was just saying before we came on, this year was the launch of the first ever World Humanoid Robot Games, like the Olympic Games, but for robots. So if you want to watch robots doing a 100-meter sprint, that now it happened in Beijing this summer. And they weren't super quick, but they did run the race. And in 2020, I wrote this book, How to Thrive as a Coach in a Digital World. And I said, there's a piece of research that suggests that all of our jobs will be replaced by the year 2050 by technology, which seemed ludicrous. And the silly example that I gave, which is like, you can't really imagine this, but this is what they're saying, is that professional sports will be replaced by machines. And then 2025, it turns out, is the point at which they are now carrying out professional sports. Given the speed of technology change, do I think that professional sports could, that a robot could run 100 meters faster than a human by the year 2050, or in a more entertaining way? That's a long time, isn't it? A lot that can happen in 25 years. So maybe it's not so silly. It's, you know, we're living in science fiction, and the science fiction is actually quite a mundane reality that just happens to have some YouTube videos in it. You know, it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit like chess, isn't it? Where, you know, is it Magnus Carlsen was saying, I think he's the, you know, that's, I think I've got his name right. You know, he was saying, I just don't play these chess bots because they'll just wipe the floor with me. And, you know, it's interesting because they've been around for a few years now. And, but hey, you know, what disruption has that had to the global? I mean, I think chess is absolutely booming right now, if I'm not mistaken. You know, it's more popular than ever. So it does make you wonder how will it impact our, for example, orientation to sport? And how are you feeling about coaches? And, you know, it's the question that's not the right question, but I think everybody's fascinated with how will AI disrupt the field of coaching? You know, on the one end, you've got replace coaching. Maybe on the other end, you've got, you know, it's going to actually increase the pot of potential coaches because more people, it democratizes the field of coaching. And, you know, people like Joe Hudson, who I saw a post on LinkedIn, who coaches Sam Altman or has coached Sam Altman and is close to the OpenAI team and has kind of said, you know, he's doubling down on, you know, training his community of coaches or, you know, developing his own coaching skills around emotional intelligence, presence, in a sense, like the novelty of being in a kind of unique human to human connection and everything that comes with mastering that interaction. Where are you at with this relationship and the disruption of AI in the field of coaching?
Yeah. Well, this is very interesting because I'm just generally interested. You know, I love coaching. I'm interested in AI and they're meeting. It's interesting you point out chess because chess is something, it was in the 90s, I think, that Garry Kasparov was beaten by the computer. So, you know, but a long time ago, really too long ago, I feel too old. But yeah, you know, I remember it happening when I was young. And that hasn't stopped people playing chess. And like you say, actually today, more people are playing chess than ever. And it's technology that has allowed more people to do it. And the way that people are playing chess more than anything is in an app on their phone. So this thing that stops there being any point in playing chess, what is the point when a computer can genuinely beat every single human ever? Because chess is so predictable, you know, it just sits within those confines and you just guarantees it's always going to beat you. There's no point in competing anymore, but it involves more people somehow. That's a fun little paradox of being human, isn't it? And it democratizes it, right? And now AI comes along and we've been talking about democratizing coaching for a long time. Well, 10 years or so, that phrase has been around substantially in the world of coaching. And what it looked like up until pre-ChatGPT was Well, you know, we're a platform that democratizes coaching, which means that it's not just the C-suite or people who are lined up for the C-suite who get access to coaching. We go down a level, maybe two. So your job title might be senior manager, and you're going to get access to an executive coach just like the CEO does. But in reality, you know, if you're the cleaner, you're never going to get a coach. So it's not democratizing it, really, is it? It's just making it marginally cheaper, which is not the same thing. But AI does mean that if you're a cleaner, you can have access to a really good quality coaching-like experience. You could argue what definition of coaching is, and if the definition of coaching includes a relationship with a human, then AI doesn't do it. But if coaching is defined as a, what's the ICF definition of coaching is pretty loose. You know, it's a creative, purposeful, co-created conversation or something like this. That's nothing like it at all. But it's something about developing and increasing awareness. Well, AI can absolutely do that when it's prompted well. And so if you can create a tool that allows people to get access to that, suddenly everybody's got access to it. So what's the point in working with any sort of human at all? Well, the truth happens to be with coaching, and has been the case forever, nobody has gone out to the market to look for a coach because they're wanting to spend as little money as possible. You know, a coach is a choice of an investment that is often quite substantial because you believe that it's worth the investment. So I don't see the immediate threat of, oh, suddenly every human coach is going to lose their job because the AI is cheaper, and it is cheaper, a lot cheaper. But it is absolutely present. And yeah, maybe it introduces more people to the world of good quality coaching that allows you to say, oh, there's a pocket of people who would really benefit a lot from human coaching that we never particularly thought of. And so it's worth expanding, you know, our coaching reach to reach those as well. And maybe it changes the shape of what coaching really ought to look like. So a question that I'm asking myself a fair amount is, what is it that I'm doing differently that genuinely makes me worth this much more than an AI? Because it isn't just asking the good next question in the GROW model. And that's not dissing the GROW model. It's just, you know, a statement of fact. If you want taken through the GROW model really strictly and to never give any advice and everything, then just tell AI to do it and it will always do it. Tell me to do it, and I just can't help myself from thinking, like, but I've got a piece of information that might be helpful, or not sure that GROW is particularly helpful in this place, and so let's just play around with something slightly different. So I think there's something about us leaning into that makes us different, which I think is really important for us, so that we know why we're so expensive in relation to that and so limited in our scale, when obviously AI, the scale is virtually infinite. Yeah, to answer, oh, sure.
Yeah. That. I mean, I feel, if I share my personal relationship to this, you know, at first I was like, okay, wow, this is coming in fast. You know, there's going to be an exponential uptick in terms of its quality. Wow, you know, I was kind of concerned and worried. Mm. I mean, you know, generally, if I look out in the world with what's unfolding, you know, I feel we live in extraordinary times, but also I'm concerned, you know, there's lots of things to be concerned about. But I noticed with AI, it's like it feels a bit like I've gone down the hype curve a little bit down the other side. And now that may be my naivety, and you know, like everybody always says, it's, you know, it's only going to improve exponentially. I've heard like Moore's law, you know, is going to be broken now and kind of go on some kind of exponential uptick. So, but so far it's like, I think it's revealing to me what I've felt, which is that there's something about the kind of idiosyncratic novelty of human beings coming together, and that we're actually not AI, that we're, you know, we're not codified in sequences, and that there's a kind of you know, we're imperfect and we're embodied and we're emotional. And and I think the other thing that I'm sat with is I feel the accountability piece It's just something in that that's huge. I mean, so there's something about the kind of mirror neuron effect of two people being together in presence and tapping into someone's deepest desires of what they want to create and be in the world, which so far I think AI can point to that with good questions, but there's something about a shared experience of that that feels very potent. And I've forgotten where I was going with this a little bit. I can't remember it now.
That's
But
okay. Isn't it beautiful to be human and to lose our thread, you know?
I had a great point I was going to go with. But I think my question is really like, where for you is it, does it feel like it is really beneficial to be in relationship with an AI? Oh yeah, that's what I was saying. I was sharing about my relationship with AI and how I feel about it. Like and accountability. So it's a great mirror to me. Like I love like refining my thinking with AI. There's dangers to that, and being overfed, and then studies already coming out where our thinking is becoming atrophied through the use of AI. But I find it an amazing mirror in general. But there's something about two humans being together and this accountability piece where I'm not an accountability coach, but whenever I talk with AI, I can't imagine doing like a 6 month trajectory with AI coach. And when I talk to it, it feels like I don't want to talk to AI for very long, minutes at a time. It's easy to go, to leave. So I guess I'm wondering if there's something about being humans, this social knitting together of, coming into a certain re relationship with another coach that feels still a differentiating factor.
It's d depending on who you listen to, you end up with this different view of sort of what AI is and what it represents. So my social media algorithm sort of feed it to me continuously that the godfathers of AI who saw all of this coming and now they're able to comment on it because they've been working on it for 40 years when people didn't even realize it was an option to think in this way when it was related to technology. And what they are saying is, oh, well, this is the best possible map that we have for the way that humans think. You know, the end is nigh. The next level of AI that we're going to experience is going to, remove all of the jobs out of the workforce and replace them, all of this sort of thing. Well, if the lens that you see it through is the capability of generative AI, then it's a bit of a different lens to think through rather than the person who turns up to work and gets on well with their colleagues and, works hard and gets stuff done and gets a paycheck, and that's it. That's kind of all it is. ChatGPT or whatever is sort of there present in the mix somewhere. But it's not the same. It's like when the lockdowns happened in 2020 and people moved from in-person to video calls. You've got the people who are creating the video calls going, we have replicated, fully replicated the experience of meeting with each other. You can see the micro details on each other's faces, you can see them better than you can in person. And you can chat and share files, so it's better than being in person. And anyone who has met anyone else in person goes, that isn't. It's nowhere near as good. It's way better. I love to shake somebody's hand, just sit next to him, and be allowed to both look at a picture on the wall and not feel like that's rude. Like this, it's just better. Yeah, there's other things that you can do in a video call, but it's not definitely not the same. And it's definitely not better. It's just a different thing. And I think when you talk about accountability, I'm a coach and I meet with a bunch of different coaching clients. And for some of them, then the very fact that they can see that they're meeting me that day means that they suddenly go and do the stuff in the morning that they said they were going to do the last time that we met. Not for all of them. But for some, the fact that they know they're going to have to sit in front of me and apologize, basically, well, I said I was going to do this and now I actually haven't done it, even though I know it's for my good. That the fact that it's a human makes them do it. That feels like that's a really helpful thing about being a human. I reckon that for some other people, what they really want is just somebody to nudge them. And actually, an app to do that is a more effective way of doing that for them, based on their personality. So maybe it's just a question of people have different preferences, but it's definitely different. So like you say, that you can have a quick interaction with AI and you want to be able to close it, and that's just the end of it. The AI, you use the word presence. The AI is not present, even though it pays attention to every single word that I say, even though it is able to take into account everything it ever remembers for me, never forgets, and all of this sort of thing. It's not the same. It doesn't care. It doesn't even know I exist. You know, I send it a message and it just processes the message. It doesn't know that I am an actual human being. You know, it can say that it knows it because that's the response that it is predicting is most likely to be generated. Like, it's not conscious. It's not making decisions, but it appears like it is. But it's fundamentally different. It doesn't miss me when I'm not around. I'm not sure that I really miss my coaching clients, but I think about them from time to time. You know.
I mean, tell that to the people who are in relationships with AI. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's, well, I suppose what this highlights is that the coaching experience is a lot in the attitude of the coaching client. So there are some of the best coaches in the world. If you sit with somebody and they just are not in the mood to be coached. And I mean, I've had it. I'm not claiming to be one of the best in the world at all, but you know, I've had people turn up to a coaching session and say, I've just got so much on my plate. So and so's just handing their notice. I just can't do this session today. And I can say, well, should we do it anyway? It's in the diary. You said it was important. We've scheduled it for a reason. And they're like, no, I'm not here. But like, what can I do as a coach, even as a human coach? I can't really do anything there. But somebody who's super, super hungry for it, maybe with an AI, then they actually get the value that they want to from it. In some cases, not all of the cases, but maybe for enough, then that's sort of enough to it gives the value. I'm concerned, I suppose, ethically. Well, this is an interesting journey that I've been on. We started the company AICoach.chat, or we built a product in the summer of that year that we did the last podcast episode. So we talked in March or something like that, and in May, June, and we started creating AICoach.chat. And we had a chat, my co-founder, Baz, and I, we had a conversation. What is it that we want to create? What do we not want to create? And we were very clear. We, under no circumstances, do we want to encourage human beings to build relationships with a machine. So we were very clear. It does not have a name. The coach you're interacting with is AICoach.chat. It's not personable. It doesn't have a face. You interact with an avatar that is represented by a computer chip. And people didn't enjoy it, and so they didn't use it. We also tried to replicate the human experience where in a coaching session, you might spend, it wouldn't be an hour, but you'd definitely spend 20 minutes in a reflective conversation where you talk about stuff and you set some actions, and then they ask you questions in the next session. And people don't like that. They want it quick and they want it a bit fun. And something that makes it fun is that you've given it a name. So we've learned some lessons and we've sort of turned it around a little bit. And so there's a bit of an encouragement for you to create a character that you'd like to interact with. And the character that you've created with a fictional backstory, and it tells you how this character that you've created would typically dress, then you we'll get a personalized email from them every so often saying, oh, it's been a couple of days since our last session, but when we last spoke, it was about this and this. Maybe you'd like to have another session. It turns out that's just fun. And so people get more value out of it. So I'm a little softer on it than I was before. I'm not at all convinced that it actually does have feelings or builds a relationship, because it genuinely doesn't care. If I just switch off the server, it doesn't even exist anymore, as if it never did.
Yeah. There's so many questions that I have to ask. I mean, I can, you know, fun is not a bad thing, you know. Maybe I'm guilty, and, you know, part of the coaching community is guilty of getting a bit too serious, you know, around this whole thing sometimes, you know. That being said, I feel this is a vocation for me, being a coach. There's a deep sense of calling inside of it. And, you know, so it's both and, you know. So there's so many questions I want to ask you. Let me go here first. So And I want to weave in what you've learned around, your AI coach.chat. What are you learning about what it's doing well? But, the question around these large language models kind of making stuff up, and Jill Nephew was on the podcast, and she's really adamant. She takes a strong stance against the use of large language models and the dangers that they pose. One of them being that you would have to be, a kind of domain expert in a particular topic, and even then, you might struggle to recognize where it's bullshitting still around, things that it says it knows, and I've, I took it upon myself to use ChatGPT regularly because I was like, okay, I need to get in, I want to. And like I said, I've this stuff about it, I've really, really appreciated. But this thing about, it using my own language back to me, the pleasing thing, which I know the, version 5 is doing less of. But it, yeah, where are you at with that and how that could impact, a coaching conversation? Yeah.
So, like a coaching conversation specifically, I think there's a bit of a philosophical question about what makes it coaching
Right.
and the position that we have taken. This is something that we've not moved on right since the beginning, is that the sort of coaching we want to deliver is non-directive. So the purpose of the AI coach, if it's prompted well, and there's a lot of different layers that sort of go into creating an output that you like, but what it ought to do is that I say, I've got my first performance review that I'm ever delivering on Monday, how should I approach that? Our AI coach ought to respond by going, I can feel that there's something going on for you in relation to preparing for your performance review. What's important to you about getting it right this time? Or something along those lines. It's a nice question that sort of takes you into a reflective space. It's a bit of work for you. It is not going to say, start by asking them how they think their year went. Make sure you've prepared your points of feedback that you're going to get. Like that's. You can get that stuff off a rubbish blog article or ChatGPT. And it wouldn't be bad, but it wouldn't be what we're trying to create in our coaching. And so the risk of this hallucination experience is effectively not there in non-direct, because all it's going to do is ask you a question. It's not going to generate some piece of advice for you that is made up and is misdirectional, is not accurate. I do think anytime there is any new piece of technology, there are downsides that are associated with it, and it's extremely difficult to predict what those downsides are until it hits the real world and they start to appear. So the example I have always given for this is 3D printing came out as this fun way for you to make your customized chess set at home. Or I play miniature war games. You can make your own little minis, and you can put your own face on a mini, and then that your mini is part of. It's you on the battlefield sort of thing. And so that's fun. And so then 3D printers came out and somebody created their own gun, working gun. Ooh. The people who created the 3D printer were little nerds who thought chess sets were cool rather than somebody who thinks that they might actually be able to make a weapon, which actually, in hindsight, is pretty obvious. Just like social media, give the like button. Oh, that's it was meant to be to make people feel good. And now it doesn't seem to do that. It makes things worse at systemic level. So in hindsight, maybe it's obvious. And the same with generative AI. It's intended to generate a response, whereas, old school chatbots, very common for you to say, I don't know, what's the weather like in Ealing today? I live in Ealing. And it go, I don't understand. Because it's in the mood to get another sort of question. That's, it's annoyingly common. So that's a, it's a downside that sort of comes with it, is that somebody could use a ChatGPT or something like that to give them a piece of information that they end up being misled by, which of course in hindsight, yeah, it's going to do that, isn't it? Because if it doesn't know, it doesn't say I don't know. It just says something that sounds plausible enough. So I'm sure there are loads of articles that are being generated by AI and being published probably tens of thousands of times today that are quoting specific percentages that come out of specific named reports that don't exist. And so people will end up making decisions based on data that looks so credible, and there's an entire, you know, reference set, but it just isn't real. That's a big risk. And I think that we do need to, as a human species, at a society by society level, we need to become much more skeptical and sort of question things in a way where it is no longer good enough for you just to go citation needed, because it's provided a citation, but the citation isn't real. But it looks real. Everything about it looks real. It might even be an active link. You know, it's a new evolution in a level of skepticism that we've never needed. You know, previously it has been the case that if you're the person that says citation needed, it's because you're the SWAT and you probably didn't need a citation, but because you're obsessed with your degree that you got, you desperately needed to have one. Well, now there ought to be a level of skepticism in us that just stops us from taking anything at face value, anything at all, even photographic evidence that is presented to us, even video evidence. It's everything needs to sort of be misbelieved at first, which is it's not particularly helpful to have this sort of cynical mindset, but just to question and be able to go, right, where is this actually coming from? And given everything else that's happening in the world, it feels that's a difficult thing for us to do.
Yeah, I guess that it will be where, you know, curated, trusted sources will become even more important, you know, for us to verify information. I mean, I imagine also there'll be a phase where it may be through regulation we might get that one sorted out, but, you know, there might be a 5-year period where it's just the Wild West of, like,
bullshit. It's the same. Like I say, with every technology, it's the same. You can see it. I looked for a long time in the world of sort of cybersecurity, and it was constantly you are trying to anticipate which direction the hackers are going to go next. And some of the time that's okay. And sometimes something awful happens, and so you have to radically respond to everything having to stop this specific thing from happening. And so everybody in the world gets an urgent Android update because hackers got into one particular place. You know, somebody's smartphone in Slovenia got hacked in one place. So everyone now needs the update, because as soon as you as a hacker, if you found out that works, everybody's phone is broken. And so there's this constant, yeah, you're trying to anticipate and you're trying to respond, and regulation is slower, appropriately needs to go through, you know, levels of approval and consultation and all of this sort of thing. But you can't ever fully guess. And so things are going to go wrong. And it's not good enough, I don't think, to just point at the developers and go, just stop innovating. You know, it's too risky. Things are going wrong. You're being harmful and you're not thinking through the consequences, because it's the world that we live in. We are humans. Humans cannot stop being creative and acting out that creativity. And there is a level of curiosity, which as coaches, we're meant to have as sort of part of our attributes, that when you are a developer who is right at the cutting edge of generative AI or any sort of technology, that you would go, I wonder what happens if I do this. And some of those things that it's going to do are going to be unhelpful. Some of them are going to not work, and some of them are going to be super helpful.
Mm.
And a lot of them that are the most helpful are going to be the most disruptive in opposite ways. And I think a nice example that I think about is if you're a carpenter in the Middle Ages and you were transported forward in time 500 years, taken to IKEA. At first, you'd go, this is incredible. The quality of the furniture in this store is really good. Now you look at it closer and you go, oh, it's not even really wood, is it? It's this sort of fake something. And you can pack it flat and it costs like 5% of what it would cost me to make the same thing, but you can make thousands of them in the same period of time. As a carpenter, there are a couple of things that happen to that. One of it is, okay, well, there's a bunch of people that I currently sell to that don't want it now, because all they want is just a functional chair. You might as well get that for cheaper. But it actually turns me into this craftsman expert, where if you get a custom built chair from a carpenter. Oh, that's going to have been expensive, isn't it? So, and I think as coaches, you know, that's it's a nice analogy, I think, for us that AI is coming along, doing some things, you know, some of it's good, some of it's bad. If it suddenly empowers everybody in the entire world to do something that they couldn't before, and we become this even more, trusted, rare, exotic resource, you know, maybe that's just a side effect of it.
Yeah, that's a nice kind of analogy or, you know, example of where maybe analogy is the wrong word, but where it could take us, you know, that maybe there's a lot less carpenters around than there used to be, but the ones that are there, you know, are making bespoke furniture at order and getting paid well for it. I don't know that scene very well, but.
Yeah, but I don't know the scene very well, but it's the sort of thing. Well, I mean, I've never even looked in the data, and so I don't know what it looks like. But I do know that there are still people working as carpenters. There's loads. A friend of mine's a carpenter, so there are still carpenters. Maybe there are more, because I do know that there's, you know, custom built stuff. You know, the society as a whole has become richer, and so if you're opening a museum and you'd like a nice custom piece to go in your entrance foyer, that's just something that didn't exist before the Industrial Revolution in the same way. So, you know, maybe there's just extra things that emerge out of the, you know, there's the systemic change.
Well, maybe that's a good place to kind of pivot and in the last part of our conversation talk about I want to mix in two things, you know, in a sense of like where do you think, you know, in the future this is going if we look 5, 10 years ahead from now? And in a sense, like what are the opportunities for coaches to work, collaborate with AI? Because I think that's something we haven't talked about. And you know, I've always felt like the kind of meeting once every 2 weeks is a kind of weak ecosystem. You know, it's like you can build in resources around that. You know, like maybe you've got a little portal your client comes into with pieces you've written. But it feels like with AI, there's an opportunity to kind of create a more in touch, bespoke experience. But so where are you? Where are you excited about the opportunities for collaborating with AI with coaching and where it, you know, where could it go like 10 years from now if we just imagine?
Well, sort of very, very tangible, practical application of AI in my own practice. I train coaches in how to do this. Like, it's an important little bit of what I do is using automation platforms alongside AI to create these virtual colleagues. One of those virtual colleagues is an AI coach that sort of thinks a bit like Sam does. It's not getting coached by Sam, but if you send an email with a particular subject in the subject, particular term in the subject, then it will process that email and it will send you a personalized response. That's pretty good. It's also pretty samey. So after you've used it a couple of times, it's not going to catch you by surprise with the way that it's shaped, because it's shaped in the same way every time. But it is highly personalized, and it will ask you some very good questions that get you thinking in between coaching sessions. And it takes, I mean, I train people in this, and by the time that we get there, after a couple of weeks, it'll take 20 minutes for me to walk it through on screen and for you to be copying on your screen. For you to go from, I have not started this, to I have fully implemented an AI coach in my coaching practice, which is not very long. And once you have understood how the bits put together, then you think, oh, I could make that really smart. And if you spend half a day, then you're going to have something which is so highly bespoke in your environment and maybe personally bespoke for a client. And maybe you could charge them a premium for the fact they've got access to this unique tool. It took you half a day. So the opportunities, I think, are really there, that if you are curious enough and you want to experiment, you could do something like that. You come up with your own ideas, and once you've got access to the technology, then you can do some really good stuff. I do think it's worth saying that when we did the last episode, so let's say it was 3 years ago, which is a little bit less than that, which is interesting. At the time, I think you said, oh, you know, make a prediction. When do we see the first AI coach deployed in an organization? And at that point, I think that I guessed quarter three, 2023. I think. And I don't know that there was one done then, but I do know that one started in quarter four 2023, a little one. And there have been a few since then. And there are some AI coaches or things that are calling themselves AI coaches that are getting quite a lot of traction. You know, there's lots of funding now around in AI coaches. But here we are 3 years later. And if I look at what does my actual life and working day look like as a result of AI being present in it? And I'm somebody who's quite stuck into this world. It looks virtually identical. I use some different products from time to time, but I still talk with people. I still do coaching. I still do everything else that I used to do. The market's shifting as it always has done. And so there's good seasons and worse seasons, but it's not. I'm not sitting here with this sort of looming tidal wave of AI coming and completely decimating the world around me. It just feels like it's sort of, broadly speaking, the same as it always has been. So as long as we're open-minded enough to play with it. And it's interesting, I use that word play a lot, actually, which is something that comes up in my coaching sessions. I take it seriously, and part of the seriousness of it is just to have a play, experiment, see if something works. I think it's a bit important.
Well, what would be a just on the back of that, I want to ask you what would be another prediction you'd make, but I read an article about OpenAI, and it was interesting. There was this little bit at the bottom, and I was like, that's a fascinating. It was a quote from Sam Altman. It's in The Guardian, so I'm trusting it's true. And the quote said something along the lines of, he was saying, look, at the end of the day, the average person might not notice that much with this incoming tide of AI. Where there could be huge advancements is in, and he said it in medical breakthroughs. And I was like, that's an interesting quote from Sam there, because that's not in line with what I've heard him say previously, which is, hey, watch out, hold on tight, basically. This is going to be, this is massive, and it's going to maybe freak a bunch of people out. So that I just kind of, I remember I saved the quote, and so anyway.
Well, I think that is back to what I said before. When everything that you see is through the lens of this is what generative AI is capable of doing, then it looks like it's capable of, for example, fully reproducing what happens in a customer service conversation. Because at a functional level, it does all of the same things. I listened to you and I understood your request. I directed you in the right direction. I processed your refund. All of those things, it's fully automated from end to end. So, well, let's make everybody redundant in that team. It doesn't actually work. Even though it functionally is able to do the same things, there's a lot that's happening, which we just don't state. Coaching is a brilliant example of this. Look at the coaching competencies that any of the professional bodies come out with. And, spend a quarter of an hour thinking about it, and you'll think of something that's happening that they've not stated, and you don't really need to state it, but is happening. That is re it's really happening. You talk about mirror neurons. I don't know of any coaching competency framework that talks about mirror neurons. You don't need to say it, but it's happening, and it makes a difference. Probably. Oh, we can't define it. Oh, I can't define it. Some researchers somewhere might be able to. So it's trying to pick that thing out. I expect that 2 or 3 years ago, when he saw ChatGPT has suddenly shot off the scale, well, imagine what's possible. Of course, everything's going to change. And then here we are 3 years later, and it's not really changed that much. It's now sort of present, but there are some massive breakthroughs it's having, particularly in the world of research. The story, the headline that I see every so often is researchers have been trying to solve this maths problem for the last 250 years, and ChatGPT did it in 10 minutes. And yes, because they've learned all of the way of sort of how to position it. And when you really switch on generative AI with something where you're able to get the parameters working right and you just process it through the machine, then it can do some really, really smart stuff. And health is a great example of where the world completely changes once you take smallpox out of it for the average person. It just completely changes. That's a real difference that it can make. And it comes with a whole bunch of questions that go alongside it. So we're still wrestling with it, I suppose, but keep watching.
What would be a prediction you'd make for another, 2.5, 3 years from now? I mean, I know you're making them in a way. You're saying like, look, we might not actually see on our day-to-day life that much change, but what prediction might you make for?
Yeah, the experience of having access to an AI coach in the workplace, and I use that term extremely loosely. There are some things that are calling themselves AI coaches where they themselves, when they introduce it, explain it's not actually a coach. So very broadly speaking, I think it would be absolutely expected that a lot of people in a few years' time would be expected to have access to something that they might call an AI coach or think of one. Whether that's good or bad, that's sort of beside the point. I think that they will have access to something like that. I do think that the next technology, I might have said this last time because I've been saying it forever, smart glasses. I now have a pair of smart glasses, and I didn't until this year, even though I knew they existed. But I've got a pair of smart glasses. I wear glasses normally. And so the ability to have a pair of glasses that also acts as Bluetooth speakers, if nothing else, is worth the £20 that I paid for them. I had to pay an extra £20 to get the prescription. But, if you don't mind wearing glasses, I've got a pair of glasses that connects to the internet, has got AI built in and a camera, acts like Bluetooth headphones. If I can see people without needing to even get my phone out of my pocket and have a conversation with them, that seems pretty cool. So I think that that's going to happen in the next few years. Let's see.
Yeah, nice. Well, we're can you tell us more about, Sam, just for people listening, where they you train coaches in collaborating with AI, and you have AI coach.chat, sorry. Could you say more about where we can find out more about your work?
Thank you. I'm on LinkedIn. That's probably where I am most often. So yeah, find me on LinkedIn. There's only a couple of Sam Isaacsons and only one of me is a coach. And so if you find me, then that is me. I run a training program that I call the Coach Tech Academy. And so that's training and how to make these virtual colleagues that I've mentioned. And I run a community called the Coach Tech Collective, where we meet every month with a report that I write about what has happened in the world of technology. And what I'm particularly excited about at the moment is just pulling the plans together for it. I ran quite a big conference earlier in the year, the Digital and AI Coaches Conference, and we have that running again this coming February, 12th and 13th of February, 2026. And Joel, you're going to be there.
Yes.
We're going to be having a conversation on that conference. And so yeah, it'll be great to have as many people there as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Hey, Sam, thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Wonderful to be with you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this, and it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.